This podcast includes graphic depictions of true crime cases and may contain explicit language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, this is Robin.
This is Jackie.
And this is Amanda.
And you are listening to We Saw the Devil, a podcast dedicated to horror, true crime, and all things macabre. If you want to follow us between shows, don't forget to check us out online. You can go to our website at www.wesawthedevil.com. You can follow us on Instagram at We Saw the Devil Podcast or on Twitter at We Saw the Devil. And if you want to follow specific co-hosts' social media, you can find the links to those on our website as well. So welcome back, everyone, for another episode of As the Day Bell Turns. It seems like that's pretty much what's been going on lately.
As the funeral bell chimes.
We put out the episode on Sunday discussing Lori Vallow's first appearance in the Madison County Court in Idaho. And lo and behold, here we are on March 10th. And even though nothing's been going on directly with Lori, we have a lot of stuff to once again cover.
Right. More information has been discovered.
And I wasn't here, so I needed to catch up.
Yes. Welcome back, Amanda. Did you enjoy your bender in Vegas?
Yeah.
It was really a spectacle. Yeah. Yeah. And I did get to visit a couple places involving the Vallow saga as well. So I did get to hit up the chapels that Alex got married in and Melanie got married in.
That's exciting.
That is exciting. Yeah. And as we announced last week, we will be traveling to Rexburg. We'll have a lot more footage, pictures, videos, so on and so forth. So titty slap that subscribe button and stay up to date. We also have a YouTube channel. If you haven't been there, it's We Saw the Devil. Subscribe to that.
How does one titty slap a subscribe button?
Take out your titty and slap it. Slap it down on that join and subscribe button.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty intense.
It is.
Who needs Victoria's Secret when you can just subscribe?
Right. Exactly. Stop wearing bras altogether. Subscribe.
Oh, free the babies.
So yeah, let's get into it. So I would like to start out. I know that we've gotten a lot of YouTube comments on the most recent episode, and then also Twitter and even Instagram comments. I've also received a handful of emails discussing Lori's appearance in a court. It seems like it was pretty controversial.
Mm-hmm. And the pink handcuffs were quite the topic.
Yes, that seems to be kind of a common factor here with all communications. Let's start out, Amanda. So do you want to start with YouTube and kind of address some listeners there?
Yeah. So thank you, Dolores, for all of your comments. She kind of went through and gave her input on what you guys were talking about. So again, I wasn't here last week, but Dolores, I missed you too. Thank you for that. That made my day. There was also a couple comments in regards to, you know, Tammy passing away in her sleep and just kind of refreshing that. A couple people subscribing. So thank you, Barbara and Mariah, for your comments there. And then something we will be talking about tonight, so I'm going to save it for later. But thank you, Monica, for your digital evidence comment, because we will be discussing that a little bit later. And then the pink handcuffs. So Robbie was mentioning that the police departments identify their smaller cuffs with pink ones in certain departments. I don't know if that's the case for Idaho. But also here in Arizona, there's been a lot of pink in some of the jails and around kind of Sheriff Joe before. So I know there was their outfits sometimes were pink, and I've seen some things with pink handcuffs, but I haven't seen any pictures of prisoners with them here. So I guess it's kind of a big thing all over.
Well, move over for Versace, because we have designer handcuffs.
Yeah. So is that, does that sum it up for YouTube?
Yeah, for this week's YouTube. So yeah, thanks for everyone that have subscribed. And we do truly read all the comments and we talk about them. We try to get back to everyone too. So we very much appreciate when you take the time to leave us one.
Yes, very much so. And also emails too. So if you have any comments, questions, anything to add, feel free to reach out. You can email us at wesawthedevil@gmail.com. We got a handful of emails over this last week, so I would like to do a quick shout out to those people. So first, from Kate. Kate lived in Rexburg for 5 years and went to BYU. She provided a lot of really great information on BYU, Rexburg, kind of the feel of the town, the layout of it, and how rural some of the areas are. So thank you for that information. Also, we have Sarah. Sarah reached out and asked us to cover the Evelyn Boswell case. So in Tennessee, which we, Jackie and I, actually touched on and mentioned last week. So thank you for your request, Sarah. And also big thank you to Brittany. Brittany is an ex-Mormon per her email. And she mentioned how in one of our previous episodes, how we kind of questioned how Chad and Tammy lived on such little money. And she said, basically, the Mormon Church has a benefits program to members to cover food bills, etc., for faithful members that struggle financially. So thank you very much for that information. We really appreciate it. I had no idea. And then Kelly Saunders. So Kelly, thank you very much for your very kind email. She's a former police officer. And she said that she laughed at our pink handcuff comments and basically said that officers oftentimes buy their own handcuffs. So it's very possible that the police officer who cuffed her at that time, you know, from the jail and brought her to the court, could have just actually had a pair of pink handcuffs in their possession. So it isn't necessarily indicative of favoritism, you know, anything like that. That is interesting. Really appreciate you reaching out.
I love the professional insight, too. Thank you.
Yes, very much. We really appreciate it. On Twitter, we also got a couple of messages from current or previous law enforcement officers. They all actually back that idea of officers just buying their own handcuffs. Some officers apparently do it too, like Amanda said, like in Arizona, how pink underwear, pink handcuffs, you know, things like that were meant to kind of embarrass. Apparently, a lot of police officers thought it was hilarious arresting like 350-pound basically linebackers and putting them in like pink handcuffs. So it seems like that's likely the case.
Also in the group on Facebook, we've seen a couple posts too, and just thank you for sharing our podcast. I know Alex has talked about it, and it looks like Ashley has said some kind things, so thank you guys. Oh, and also just on Facebook, on We Saw the Devil, Carly, your Mary Kay meme made me laugh.
I laughed so hard.
I thought it was great. Brilliant. Thank you, ladies.
Yeah, that's Carly and Jamie. Your guys' comments always make our day, so thank you.
So again, guys, if you have anything to say, questions or comments, hit us up on any of our social media channels. That's Twitter at We Saw the Devil, Facebook at We Saw the Devil, Instagram, We Saw the Devil Podcast, and email is WeSawTheDevil@gmail.com. And finally, our website is WeSawTheDevil.com. So many ways you can contact us.
Yes. And if you want to remain anonymous, just put that in your email and we'd be happy to share the information without saying your name too.
Yes. Thank you again for listening. And are you guys ready to get into it?
All right. Let's do our updates. Okay, so something that I know you guys touched on was the bail. So it was lowered to $1 million. And basically the stipulations, if she was able to get bail, she would have to wear the GPS monitor, sign a waiver of extradition. She cannot leave Fremont, Madison, Jefferson, and Bonneville counties. So that was all said in the hearing, right? Well, since then, Lori is still in jail. And I was very much surprised by that. I thought immediately she would be out the door that night. Well, two local bond companies were telling East Idaho News that they were contacted by the Daybell representatives, but declined to work with her. And then on Fox 13, they said many bail bond companies will not have enough insurance to cover a $1 million bond. So she's having trouble getting out. Poor thing.
I know. It's really sad. And there was a great interview, too, with another bondsman, I believe in Utah, Salt Lake City. And he basically kind of explained why she's having such a hard time getting out. So this is actually very similar to the Casey Anthony case, right? Okay, so Lori Vallow's bail is now set to $1 million. Mm-hmm. That means they have to come up with $100,000 and then $900,000 in collateral to make up for it, right? So let's say that she's bailed out and then additional charges are filed. She can be rearrested and that collateral is useless.
Interesting.
Like, it's a loss. Basically, no, the bottom line is that woman, no company wants to touch her with a 10-foot pole, especially knowing that there are going to be additional charges at some point in this case, because they would have to come up with the additional bond, say if she flat out gets murder charges, you know, whatever, a social security fraud, like the whole bit. Basically, you have to keep in mind that we're not technically just dealing with the $1 million bond. Everyone knows there are going to be additional charges.
And the flight risk is a huge factor in this, too,
right,
for them.
Right.
Because they find that she's a liability and she may not show up to court and they're out of $1 million.
I mean, she'd have that monitor, but I guess if she was able to somehow get that off, I don't know.
Yeah. It's basically, you know, and like you, I thought that the day that she was in court with how she was smirking and so on and so forth, I was like, this bitch is going to be out by evening. Mm-hmm. And here we are, what, like 4 days later, 5 days later, and she's not going anywhere.
Nope. I was imagining her leaving and getting a new lipstick there. But yeah, I was very happy to see that she is stuck. But I have seen a lot of speculations, too, that they were like, yeah, she's staying there purposefully, which, you know, doesn't seem like the case if they've contacted bondsmen. But some speculations I've read this week were she's staying there because she knows that she's done nothing wrong.
Oh, come on.
And that
on.
It's going to come up and clear her name.
I disagree. Well, I think, I mean, especially since, you know, the Daybell representatives have been contacting multiple bondsmen and bonds companies. And yeah, she... At this point, I mean, that's a lot of collateral to produce. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And you know what? I know that not a single person is going to shed a tear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know, when she was extradited too, because I wasn't here, I didn't get to say that the Hawaiian prison, whatever, called me several times that day to notify me over and over again that she was moved.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, remember I told everyone to sign up for it so you could get a message. And it was a recorded message. And it was like, Lori has, I wrote it down. I have it out in the living room. But something about she was moved and like, don't contact them for more information with her because they have washed their hands of it. Like, she is gone. But if you have questions about like what happened while she was there, you could contact them. But it was just funny because it called a couple times and I finally like went through and you had to take yourself off the list for them to stop calling you.
Oh my God.
That's amazing. I have signed up with Vine.
Yeah.
Also to see if she's, you know, being released or put out on bond, and I haven't been notified yet. Okay. So hopefully I'll be able to be notified soon too and feel special.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make sure to, once she's gone, unsubscribe or they will call you every couple hours. So another
it's very important
fun thing this week, I don't know if you guys saw it, but Nate Easton's Twitter post about the Albertsons grocery store in Rexburg. Did you guys see it?
Yes, I did.
So Albertsons in Rexburg, someone I guess sent him a picture, and on their cupcakes they put "Where's the kids?"
I think we're gonna have to try and track down some of these cupcakes,
right?
And purchase them.
There's been so many businesses just, you know, all for the kids. So there's the cupcakes. I've seen a few people, I think on the Facebook group, the Christmas Misery group, saying they're selling t-shirts to wear to like the hearings.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, there's a lot. And I'm sure, I mean, imagine being them, how intimidating that is when you're seeing people walking down the street or you go to the grocery store and it's like, where's the kids? Yeah. So I think it's wonderful. Also, people have been posting Chad's house a lot. So we know when he gets groceries. We know when he leaves. We know when people come over. Like, it would be just so much easier. Just say where the kids are and everyone will leave you alone.
Right? That's pretty much at this juncture all it would take.
Right?
But
now, another thing that happened earlier. So Annie Cushing has been very busy today on the group. She's posted things from the Chandler Police Department documents that have been surfacing little by little. I still haven't gotten my hands on every page. So if anyone has the 410 pages of this document, please, please, please email it. I have random pages, so I want all of it if you have it.
Yes, she has all the time in the world to read it.
Hey.
All in a day speed reading.
Yeah, sort of. But I do have what I have printed out. And I have read through a decent amount of it. But she is going through, it looks like she's posted page numbers and paragraphs and all of that with her questions in regards to this document. Mm-hmm. And what I've been doing as she's putting up her questions is I'm also going back to not only the document, but also there's two body cam videos from police officers. There's one that questions Alex from when he shot Charles. So kind of going back a little ways. That's why it's Chandler PD. But when they're questioning Alex, and then the other body cam shows him going inside the house. So yes. For those that do not want to see Charles's body, you don't see much. It's kind of blurred out, but he does go up. He tries to take vitals on it. And then it does show a crew of people kind of working on him. So if that's too much for you to see, do not look up these videos. But I am comparing a little bit that of the questioning from Lori versus what Alex said that day on the body cam. Mm-hmm. And some things, in my opinion, aren't matching up.
No, it's very true. There are multiple statements, and it's pretty shady. And I do think that, as you stated, Annie Cushing has literally been sitting and poring over these pages and has a lot of really good questions, I think, you know, for all of it. Not only for Lori and Alex and their kind of conflicting statements, but also as far as how the Chandler Police Department handled this as a whole.
Right. And I think we said that from the beginning, where we're like, wait a minute, he's just sitting on the side of the road being questioned like he just gotten a like quick little fender bender, not that he just killed someone.
Yeah, I mean, it goes all the way through of, you know, why, basically, what did Alex do? You know, Alex said that there was blood on the faucet in the kitchen, which if you watch the cam videos, you know, Charles was right beside the kitchen, you know, right outside the kitchen. So Alex took 4 or 5 steps, washed his hands. There was blood on the faucet, photographed, but not swabbed for evidence. And then why did he wash his hands? He claims that he did chest compressions, attempted CPR, but Alex had no blood on his hands. That would have been indicative that he actually did that. The original police officer who arrived on the case, or in the original report, stated that he saw 2 shell casings, but yet another officer who came in said that there were 4. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like so many different things here.
Yeah, and then another thing too, why didn't they swab everyone's hands that were present to see who actually shot? Mm-hmm. So I know that was a question that I've been seeing quite a bit. And then,
like, gun residue.
Exactly, yeah. There would be on the hand of the shooter, or if there are, you know, multiple shots, I don't know. Mm-hmm. About the bat, I still feel like that's kind of weird, very strange, you know, as far as Tylee. And from the questioning, it sounds like Tylee and Charles didn't always see eye to eye, that sometimes, you know, she was the stepdaughter. I get it. But it just seems like they argued a decent amount going off of the paper. There was also a video of Colby, like a questioning. It wasn't the best quality, but he does talk about a little bit of their relationship. And I'm pretty sure he said that he wasn't violent, at least that he had seen. But again, he, you know, he's an adult. He didn't live there. But yeah, the bat still is weird to me. He was a ball player and, you know, Alex was just fine, it seemed. Also, Lori being outside, it seems now, if I understand it, she heard the gunshots, but didn't rush back inside.
It's really weird. And also, can we talk about when the police officer, so shooting someone, right, is still a second degree murder.
Yes.
So, and it actually says as such on the Chandler Police Department report, it was second degree murder. In any capacity, they should have restrained Alex Cox,
right?
You know, put him in cuffs, at least in the back of the cruiser, secured the scene, which they did a very, very light pat down of him and then had him sit on the curb. Now, how do you get into a supposed physical altercation, get hit in the head with the bat, shoot someone between 2 and 4 times, you know, depending on the conflicting amount of casings, wash your hands, claim to do CPR, and then you walk out completely clean with your sunglasses on your head?
I mean,
like, that, none of that makes sense.
No, not at all. No.
And I feel like he would have been a little more nervous or a little just odd, but he was so calm and just collected. And yeah, I shot him. It was self-defense. He hit me with a bat. Like, I would have way more emotion in my voice. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the documents from Chandler PD talk about, it's like an interview with Lori. I will say the way that it's written is very strange to me. There's a few times where I had to go back and I'm like, wait a minute, what are they trying to get across? And then it is blacked out. I'm guessing most of it is the kids' names, minor names. And then there is a couple small sections that are a little bit longer than a name that are blacked out that I'm not sure what they took out of it.
Yeah, I was speculating on that too. It's really odd.
Mm-hmm. But it just kind of paints the picture from Lori's point of view of what happened that day. And that starts on page, it looks like 77 mm-hmm. is when it, at least what I have, interview Lori Vallow is what it says. And mm-hmm. it just says like her statements, what she said was going on as far as, you know, JJ being in the car. And something we had talked about too before is why did she have his rental? And this kind of answered that question. So mm-hmm. he came to take JJ to school. JJ and him got in the car, but he left his phone inside. So he came back inside. JJ's still in the car. So then when all of that went down, Lori decided to leave and take JJ to school, and he was already in that car. So kind of at least answered one question that we had.
Now, what about Ty Lee? Because I actually wasn't aware until more recently that Ty Lee was homeschooled. And she, what, graduated? It said it like right when she turned 17, she took her GED. And whatnot, hence why Lori was trying to pass off the lie of her being enrolled in the local college in Rexburg. But where was Ty Lee during all of this? Has there been any additional information in the report, Amanda, about Ty Lee's presence?
I mean, it says, yeah, she went and got the bat. It says that, and again, it's hard because each name that's blacked out, like you can yep. only guess that the longer ones are Ty Lee, the shorter ones are JJ. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like she also left with Lori to go to the school, to take JJ to school. And she kind of wanted the kids out of there in this situation because she talks about how crazy that Charles could get mm-hmm, and that he mm-hmm. was kind of, you know, yelling and making a spectacle of himself. So one thing I noticed too, and I am Robin earlier and I was like, wait, so I'm watching this body cam video again because now I'm like, and I'm probably gonna have to do this several times to like find each little variant between, you know, each person's statement versus the cam and all of that. So that's gonna take me some time. But one thing I noticed is when the officer's cam, the one that actually goes inside and looks around the house, mm-hmm. he sees and he says something about like looking for Alex's wallet, looking for his like ID or identification. And he goes in this room, which is a complete mess. Like it is just stuff everywhere. There's a mattress on the floor. And I'm guessing that that's where Alex was staying. Again, that's speculation, but I mean, he's looking for the wallet. So I'm just going to assume that that's where Alex was staying because you can clearly see where Tylee's room is and it's very clean. mm-hmm. But she also had just like a mattress. So I'm guessing that's her room. It looked like a girl's room. But anyways, so he's looking for the stuff, but it looks very lived in. It looks like he had been there a while. But then mm-hmm. when you go back to the other cam, the one that's questioning him, he asks him about like, oh, who else lives here with you? And he says something like, oh, I don't live here. I was just visiting for the night. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you were just visiting for the night, why do you have so much stuff in that room?
Yeah.
So it could just be he's a complete slob. I don't know. But the way that I saw, it looks like he was staying there, not just a night.
I concur with you.
And yeah, I read somewhere too that she knew Charles was coming over and wanted her brother there. Just in case they argued. So don't know. But again, I want that full document. I only have a few pages. So if anyone has all of them, please feel free to email us so I can look at all of them and put them against the interview that is on the cam video.
Yes, absolutely.
So I know I was mentioning Annie Cushing. She also posted earlier today. And again, today's the 10th. She posted in the group looking for people to comment on Instagram posts about Yellowstone from September 8th. So remember before she had this whole campaign going, if anyone has pictures from Yellowstone, we need to get that to the FBI. It could help in the investigation. Well, luckily, a developer helped her create one for Twitter already. And it looks like, at least from what I was clicking on, it looks like someone already went through the Twitter one and commented on everyone's post from that day. But mm-hmm. now she's looking for people to help with the Instagram one. So I know a few people commented earlier. I haven't looked in a few hours saying that they were going to start on it. But there's mm-hmm. a lot of posts from that day. So if you have free time and want to just copy and paste a quick little blurb on Instagram, they have a whole like spreadsheet of the directions on how to do it and what they're asking you to do. But if you mm-hmm. can donate a few, you know, even a few hours or less even, it's not very hard.
Yes, that would be a tremendous help. There's so much data to sift through in this case that, you know, even if you can just kind of review pictures and even video, that would be tremendously helpful.
Yeah, well, they have a whole list on the spreadsheet of the URLs to everyone's post already. It's literally just going to that picture, posting the little blurb, just looking quickly at the picture and then moving on.
That's true. So two things. Preparing a People put up on like old kind of like Facebook ads for Preparing a People conference that included, you know, not only Chad Daybell, but other people that he's been, you know, associated with, and Julie Rowe in particular, and all of the different ads, you know, kind of advertisements for the different conferences and get togethers that they have. And it very explicitly, one included a video of Chad talking and explaining his beliefs. And I love how that was from like a year ago, and then Preparing a People put out a video like this week, basically being like, we don't know Chad. We had nothing to do with Chad. If he stopped by any one of our gatherings, it was literally just like, you know, a drive by. Like, we don't know him. It's like almost Mariah Carey being like, I don't know her.
Yes.
Nothing. And it's like, you guys do realize that it's 2020 and the internet exists, right? Because
right.
It doesn't fly.
But it was funny. Yeah, I saw a couple of those posts. They're like, don't associate him with us.
Yeah, don't associate. And it's like, hi there, you have videos of you guys very, very, very publicly promoting him and his books.
I just imagine them covering their faces as they walk by.
Yeah. Let's see. Other than that.
Speaking of Chandler PD, detectives from Gilbert and Chandler Police Departments are heading to Salt Lake City this week, and they're meeting with other agencies involved with the case, including the FBI. That was from 3TV earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's true.
Let's talk about Salt Lake City a little bit then. So speculation time here, because we don't know why they're going there. But why do you think?
So Tammy Daybell's body is, she's buried in Springville, Utah.
Correct.
Now, how far is Springville from Salt Lake City?
Let's take a peek.
Springville to Salt Lake City is exactly 48 minutes or 50.2 miles away. So okay. That's where Tammy's body is currently buried. So it did come out, like Amanda just said, that the FBI is heading to Salt Lake City to, you know, assist in whatever. It hasn't, like, they didn't specify, right,
the exact reasons.
And then also, was it yesterday, it dropped that Alex Cox may be involved in Tammy Daybell's death. So.
Yes.
Why do you think? And I did see in another post that they're saying digital evidence.
Correct.
Of his involvement. That should be very specific. Digital evidence of his involvement.
Yeah, they say digital evidence may link Alex Cox to Tammy's death. To identify digital evidence, and again, thank you, Monica. She had a source too here. So, and it's 15 types of evidence and how to use them in investigations. So number 6 is digital evidence. Digital evidence can be any sort of digital file from an electronic source. This includes email, text messages, instant messages, files, and documents extracted from hard drives, electronic financial transactions, audio files, video files. Oh, they need an and there. Digital evidence can be found on any server or device that stores data, including some lesser known sources such as video game consoles, GPS, and sports watches. And any internet-enabled devices in home automation. Digital evidence is often found through internet searches using open source intelligence. So it could be a lot of different things. So I'm wondering if maybe there's some text messages that were uncovered, or maybe some like Google searches. Maybe that's my speculation. Just saying.
It's very true. Now, also, you have to remember that Tammy Daybell died, quote unquote, in her sleep on October 19th. 2 weeks before that, she made a police report about how a masked man pulled into her driveway, had groceries. She was carrying groceries out of her trunk, and a masked man approached her with a ski mask and attempted to shoot her with a paintball gun, supposedly. Right. That's how she described it.
But why a paintball gun?
Well, I'm guessing she doesn't know if it was a paintball gun or not.
Yeah.
It's very specific, though, to be like a paintball gun.
Well, I'm sure she didn't think that someone was trying to murder her.
Right. She was so sweet and loved by a lot of people. So that probably came out of the blue.
Right. So 2 weeks later, she was dead. in October. So I wonder, and it's again speculation purely, if Alex Cox was in fact that masked person. So I actually read the Facebook post. So Tammy Daybell made a Facebook post about her experience of what happened. And she says that she got out of the car, a masked man approached her. He tried to shoot at her with a paintball gun, and that she said she almost threw her frozen dinner at him, but instead screamed for Chad. And she said the masked man took off behind the house. That was 2 weeks before she died.
That's so scary.
I mean, I'd like to think it was a paintball gun, but it doesn't sound like it.
No. Yeah, that's my concern is, you know, maybe she was just like, oh, someone was trying to scare me with a paintball gun, because then it's like, a paintball gun's not going to murder you. So
I hope not.
Yeah, yeah, but still. So I don't know, but that was really sad. And as far as her body, too, so the autopsy, you sent something interesting earlier, Robin.
Mm-hmm. So her autopsy, okay, so basically because of the Lori Vallow stuff, the missing children, Lori marrying Chad, their relationship, the whole bit, right? Finally, Tammy Daybell's death has been deemed suspicious. So she passed away on October 19th, and on December 11th, her remains were exhumed, mm-hmm. okay? So they started at the Evergreen Cemetery in Springville, Utah. They, on December 11th, exhumed her body. They right. had witnesses, you know, different people. They started it at 6:30 a.m. And by 2:30 in the afternoon, her body was back in the ground.
Yep.
So based on information that we have looked at, it's going to be, and we've discussed this, I believe, in a previous episode, it's really hard to do testing on a body that has no blood in it. So they take tissue samples from organs in order to do like toxicology reports and so on and so forth. So basically it's 6:30 a.m. and she was reburied by 2:30 p.m.
Right. And they did mention, too, if they find some information, they'll have to order additional tests, you know, that for that specific information, and that can take time.
And here's my question, though, and again, this is speculation. I have looked probably 20, 30 different sources and toxicology reports, especially on exhumed remains, and it seems like it doesn't take long to just grab the tissue samples, you know, whatever the like lifetimes of the liver, and you know, scoop up different various pieces there to do some testing on. But it only usually takes maybe 6 to 8 weeks maximum. And that's for a body that's been buried for years. So I wonder, personally, I'm speculating, if the autopsy has been completed and they have the evidence. And that's also why the FBI has, you know, appeared in Salt Lake City. And that it's zipped up and they're ready to.
And you have a good source on this as well. Like you've been communicating with somebody who actually does this for a living. To get like a solid second professional opinion on how long it takes.
Right. And then also medical journal articles and so on and so forth. But from everything, it looks like 6 to 8 weeks to do all of the testing required to get any sort of even baseline. So everyone basically is speculating now that Tammy Daybell's autopsy is zipped up. It's done. Results are back. And now the FBI has flown to Salt Lake, because don't forget, this is going to be, you know, that's where her body's buried. That's where the autopsy took place.
Mm-hmm.
To go over those results.
Yeah, that's my guess. And there's a report from KSL TV, and I feel like this verbiage, a final autopsy report hasn't been publicly released.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like they have something. I mean, it says too, it's yet to be officially determined, but I just feel like that publicly released part means that they have to have at least something, even if it's not completely done. They have to have some test results to talk about.
Well, I also feel like the FBI, now that they've become involved, everything has to be played so meticulously, because Chad is still out, right? Like, we can't forget that Chad is still out walking and is involved with all of this in some capacity as well. So
God knows what he's doing in the background of everything.
Right.
So I feel like, you know, everything has to be released, investigated, and they're working behind the scenes. So I think it will be released publicly at the right time.
Yeah, yeah. And in this article, too, it just says, depending on what you're looking for, the process can take a couple weeks. If everything's negative, it can take months, depending on, you know, what they're trying to find.
Yep. So I would like to bring up one. I mean, again, this is speculation, right? Based on how Tammy just like randomly died in her sleep. And there have been multiple of these cases in the media. And again, this is just speculation.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a case, so eye drops, right? There have been multiple cases in the media lately where people have been poisoning and killing their spouses via eye drops. How in the hell does someone kill their spouse with eye drops? Let me tell you. Visine, Clarine, Murine Plus, they're basically all marketed as ways for you to get the red eye out. You know, a lot of stoners use them as yeah. well. So, like, kids and stuff. Like, you can buy this stuff everywhere in at gas stations. Tetrahydrozoline is the chemical compound that helps do that. Mm-hmm. So what it does is it serves as basically a decongestant and vasoconstrictor. So vaso stands for the vessels in a blood vessel. Constrictor means make more narrow. So when blood vessels become more narrow, less blood obviously flows through them. Mm-hmm. Since blood is red, if you put them in your eye, blood vessels constrict, blood stops going through, therefore your eyes go more clear. So that's for correct usage of dropping them into your eyes. Now, what happens to you if you ingest them? The tetrahydrolazine can be absorbed through your gastrointestinal tract as well and right into your main blood circulation. And then it travels right to your heart and central nervous system. Mm-hmm. So there it can basically, you know, slow your heart rate, lower your blood pressure. It can also lead to a drop in body temperature, a coma, and death. So how much of this a chemical would you have to ingest in order to do this? Not even half a bottle will kill someone.
Right. It used to be a common thing that people used to be like, oh, just play a prank on somebody. You put a little Visine in their drink and they'll shit themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we have two things in the news. Back in January, Lana Sue Clayton was sentenced to 25 years in prison after she added eye drops to her husband's drinks in such large amounts that the chemical killed him. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest one actually was in this last December recently. A North Carolina paramedic is accused of killing his wife with eye drops. He killed her in 2 days. By just dripping over the course of 2 days, enough Visine, basically, in her drinks to kill her. So mm-hmm.
And Lana, she did it from the 19th to the 21st, so over a couple days for that one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So two people currently just recently incarcerated for murdering their spouses with this chemical. So obviously it is speculation, however, comma, I think that's definitely a valid kind of point to bring up.
It's much easier than the puffer fish.
Or you know, exactly, the puffer fish, octopus, you know, like it's, there have been some crazy theories and speculation out there, but you know, good old Visine kind of seems like a more readily available option.
It seems super easy. And then just on top of it, if she was, it was already evening, right? So the drowsiness, mm-hmm. she was having trouble breathing. So the slow breathing or absence mm-hmm. of breathing. And I mean, if she was coughing and gasping for air before she went to bed, slow heartbeat, I mean, yeah, that hits all the points that we know, at least, or that was told to us.
Uh-huh. I mean, and it is actually possible for her to have, you know, died in her sleep mm-hmm. from this. If she was given a large enough dose, it is possible if she went to sleep, she could have just literally, her heart could have stopped.
Here's a question for you. Is, not that I'm willing to try, but is it tasteless? Odorless?
It's relatively odorless. It does have a little bit of like a saline taste to it.
Have you tried it?
Yeah. Like when I was in my early 20s, I think like I used to use it a lot. I have really dry eyes mm-hmm. and I tasted quote unquote. It. And it's pretty much odor. It has a little bit of an odor. But I mean, think about it. If you put it in, say, like a mixed drink or even food, right? Like,
well, I mean, if this person did it in water, like, it doesn't smell. I mean, at least the eye drops that I use, I don't know. It's not enough to notice.
Yeah. So again, just, you know, two additional points. I think that this is a much more probable scenario than, say, rare exotic puffer fish venom. So,
hey, I did a lot of research on this puffer fish, okay?
So let's talk about speculation really, really quick of Ian Pawlowski.
Oh, his pictures that people have been posting from...
Yeah. Yeah. This is in every single Facebook group currently, and I actually saw a couple posts about it on Twitter recently this evening. So if you recall, Ian Pawlowski is Melanie Boudreau's newest husband after separating from Brandon, and he updated his Facebook profile picture on September 7th, saying that he was in Cave Falls in Yellowstone. You know, a lot of people are like, that's not Cave Falls, that's, you know, a different waterfall, that's a different waterfall. Okay, but that proves that Ian Pawlowski was in fact Yellowstone the day before Tylee and them went missing.
And The only thing I had on that, though, is did he actually say that? Because in that post, I don't see that he says where he is.
Yes, he did say it, and then he actually removed it. So there are now multiple screenshots of the original screenshot of him saying that he was there, and then the new one, and it actually shows his timeline of where he removed it and then put it up again.
Interesting. Okay, I just pulled up the picture, yeah. And when I had looked at his Facebook, because, like, when someone posts something, I try to look at it myself. Real time, look at the Facebook picture, find that person, and as of this moment, just clicking on his photo, it says September 7, 2019 mm-hmm. is when it was posted. So that's a day before.
Yes, and that she went missing.
Yeah, I can't, I mean, there. I don't know, but he's standing on a rock, there's trees in the background. I don't think it's, I mean, he's there with his kids, it looks like, too. There's other photos, if you scroll, that are also public.
And this could entirely be speculative. And don't forget, just because you upload a Facebook profile picture, it doesn't mean that picture was taken that very moment. Exactly. So it is possible that it could have come, you know, days before, weeks before, months before. But the timing of it, people have, and the fact that he put it up, misnamed the waterfall entirely as an Idaho native, completely misnaming a waterfall that you should probably be pretty familiar with, and then taking it down and putting it up all in the day, you know. So I mean, it's just weird, really weird timing of it. But you know, the web sleuth people are all over it right now too.
Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of what I find to be a little bit odd about it is the fact that he even went out of his way to post it and then take it down.
Well, I don't see that it was taken down. Like, at least when I'm looking at it, it just has the date from when he posted it.
Oh, no, the comment of him actually tagging it as the fall. So basically, he mistagged that picture as the wrong waterfall, apparently, initially. And then he, after the people all over the internet, because, you know, we're all obsessed with this case. And in the age of social media, we're, you know, trying to hunt down every single person, their social media accounts, so on and so forth. So when people started kind of researching him and they found him, he actually took that picture, the caption, down off of that photo. So it was just like, you know, people are claiming it's really weird timing, I guess. I'm not making, you know, an opinion or judgment call on it. I'm just saying that, like, that's a hot topic in a lot of these groups right now.
I sometimes really, like, wonder about this case, if there's a dark web of people interacting with one another, creating a scenario that we are just completely unaware of.
I wonder that, too, to be honest. Like, how many people are actually involved in this case as a whole?
Oh, yeah. Probably a lot. I mean, how many people came to these preparing a people thing that he, you know, would like brainwash?
Well, you know, I've looked at pictures, right? Like, preparing a people has had, you know, regardless of if they want to act like Mariah Carey with, you know, Chad Daybell or not, they know her. She goes here. You know what I mean? So, like, they've shown pictures of Chad speaking at preparing a people events. And there are, you know, from what I've seen, like 30 people, like 20, 30, 40 people. I mean, at different gatherings. So, I mean, we're not talking about Beatles selling out like Wembley Stadium, but, you know, there's, you know, 20, 30 people typically.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a lot of people, though, to be involved in something. Now, one thing we kind of breezed over, though, is when we were talking about Tammy's body being exhumed. That was December 11th, right?
That is correct. That's almost 3 months from tomorrow.
So what happened December 12th?
Yeah, Alex died. Yeah, that's actually been a huge point, is that Alex mysteriously died the day after Tammy Daybell's body was exhumed.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it could be just a crazy coincidence, but...
Yeah, and I mean... I think that there, I mean, this is, again, speculation and opinion on my part, but I think that there are two key players in this entire case that should be looked at and should be investigated. And I think one of them is Melanie Boudreaux, you know, due to her relationship with Alex, Lori, that whole side, and then Zulima Pastenes.
Yeah. Why isn't she everywhere? I feel like she's not being interviewed everywhere, or at least they're not showing people that she is. Mm-hmm. But she knows a lot. I mean, she's been with Melanie at her hearings. She's been, I mean, she was also there after the 911 call, or during the 911 call, when Alex Cox passed away.
Well, what's really interesting, too, is so Alex Cox passed away. Zalima's son is the one who made the 911 call. And then Zalima showed up minutes later.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's 25, her son. And he had, like, no idea. He was just like, yeah, this guy, my mom's boyfriend.
I love how everyone kind of has the same opinion on that. Like, in all of the groups and on social media, people are like, Jesus, I hope that I don't have him near me in case of an emergency.
Oh my gosh. That was the most awkward 911 call I've ever heard.
Yes.
Very awkward. But yeah, so he died the day after, and that just points more fingers, like, why? Why did he die that day? How did he die? And again, I check probably every couple days on his report. So Maricopa County has a case status for the medical examiner website, and his everything just says report ready, no primary cause of death pending. So nothing is up on Alex Cox quite yet.
Yeah. So speaking of, talk about like another person, a blast from the past, Joseph Ryan, Lori Vallow's third husband, father of Tylee. He died in 2018 from a supposed heart attack. And again, he was, you know, relatively quickly cremated. The FBI is now investigating his death.
Right. And they were already divorced by the time he died too. Yet they're now saying there could be foul play in that too, in his supposed heart attack.
Yeah, the Phoenix Police Department came out and confirmed that the FBI is working with them to now investigate Joseph Ryan's death, and, you know, life insurance policies and whatnot. And it seems like, guys, and, you know, just let me give you a piece of advice here, that if you're going to commit a heinous crime, please don't just jack up someone's insurance policy or like right before. I mean, obviously that's not relevant for Joseph Ryan because he and Lori had been divorced for, what did you say, like 15 years or something?
I think it was like I want to say it was like 14 years, so close.
Yeah, like a heinous amount.
Wow.
But like all the people who got incarcerated for killing their spouses with Visine, like right before they hiked up their insurance policies, Lori Vallow and Charles Vallow, you know, Charles Vallow and his insurance policy, like that's kind of a dead giveaway, guys.
Yeah.
Like just complete side note, but also to further the Gilbert Police Department, you know, because Alex died in Gilbert. Gilbert Police Department has now officially, as of an hour ago, the Gilbert Police Department confirmed that they've met with the FBI about Alex's death per ABC 15 Arizona.
Yeah. And something too, just that you actually brought up earlier before we started recording, we were looking at those emails again. So when Chad found, when Chad was emailed from, it was supposed to be Charles, but it wasn't Charles who emailed him about coming to visit. Charles emailed, Adam, which is Lori's brother, about the mysterious email 12 days before his death.
Yeah, I have a date on that email, on the original email that Lori, where Lori pretended to be Charles. That was the day before, on the 28th.
Okay, so he found it one day later, and that's June 28th, 2019. And then he emailed Adam, which is her brother, June 29th. It looks like the next morning.
So follow this timeline, guys. Lori pretends to be Charles and emails Chad Daybell and says, oh, hey, you know, thank you so much. You know, really appreciate your help, you know, ghostwriting or helping with this book. How about we fly you down here? You can stay in our guest room like you did last time. And I'm going to fly you out. How about in the next week or so before the holiday? Now, this was on June 28th. So the holiday they're speaking of is obviously July 4th. And on June 29th, the day after, Charles Vallow himself obviously discovers that email, emails Lori's brother, and is basically like, what the fuck? You know, she's crazy, the paranoia, like da-da-da-da-da, right? And less than 2 weeks later, Charles is shot dead by Alex Cox. So follow that weird timeline. So again, speculation, but why do you guys think that Lori pretended to be Charles? Do you think that they were setting this up? You know, like trying to, like, what happened there?
Right. And then on the Chandler police document too, with Lori's account for that day, there is a part. Remember when I said that Charles left his phone, right? Mm-hmm. Phone on the counter. So he had come back in. Lori said his phone was on the counter, and then Lori had his phone. He told Lori to give him his phone, and she told him, why don't you show me the text that you've been texting?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Lori said he's been acting really weird, like he's been plotting something. And I wonder if she figured out that he figured out that she had made that random email to Chad.
Yes. That's what my money is on.
Right? And I wonder if that just started the entire argument that day.
That's what I'm speculating. Now, my question being is, obviously, Charles Valo was just visiting, right? He was visiting Arizona. He was visiting to see his children in Arizona and also look for apartments so he could move there. So I still cannot wrap my mind. He and Lori were no longer, you know, really together. He was living separately. At that point, he was finished. Like, Charles was done. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So again, what purpose would Lori have faking this email to Chad?
Right.
Like, unless she was trying to place Chad Daybell at that home and give him a reason. You know what I mean? So my ultimate question in all of this is, was Chad present that day? Has anyone spoken? Does Chad have an alibi for the day that Charles was killed? Like, has anyone confirmed that?
Right. I wonder what he was doing, or, you know, if he was actually in Idaho. And then also, just as far as Adam goes, I haven't seen much on him at all. Like, I've looked at his Facebook a couple times just to see if he's speaking out, or if, you know, interviews are being done, or he mentions anything, and he really doesn't. But in the Chandler document too, they talk about Adam in there.
Mm-hmm.
So for some reason, he gets brought up right after the plotting something I just read.
Mm-hmm.
And basically is like why he's been talking to her older brother and that they hadn't talked in a while.
Right.
She says, yeah, she hasn't talked to Adam in a long time. And her husband has been texting him and questioning as to why they talk and if they talk. So I'm wondering if, you know, what does Adam have as far as both of them? Like, does he have information about Lori that we don't know? And how close was he to Charles? I mean, right. If Charles chose him to email. And again, based off of his Facebook profile, and you can post whatever, you can lie on Facebook, I don't know. But he seems like he's the one that has, like, his stuff together.
Yes.
So I want the sane person's input on this family as well.
Right.
Yeah, if he is. Again, he could totally have just a very well-edited Facebook profile, but at least on the surface, it looks like he's a pretty good guy.
It's very true. So all of this is just becoming so incredibly bizarre, you know, more by the day. And what's so interesting is that this was actually a quiet week, wasn't it? You know, beyond Lori's first, you know, hearing on Friday in Idaho, like, the last, like, 4 or 5 days, it's like 4 days have been very, very quiet. And all of this information has come out.
Yeah. A lot of, I think it's more just like piecing things together again. And then little tidbits are coming out each day about, you know, dates that things happened, or
the FBI confirming involvement.
Right. Right. So just things are changing day to day. And again, this is the 10th. We'll see what happens even in the morning.
That's true. Did you have anything else?
I did visit the chapels over the weekend.
So tell us about it. How was it? I saw some of your pictures.
Yeah. So both the chapels. So let's go back. Chapel of Love in Las Vegas. That is where Alex and Zulima got married. And their witness was a security guard named Keisha. Now, Melanie got married at Lucky Little Chapel. And so Melanie and Ian got married there, and Alex was their witness. So I actually went to Lucky Little Chapel first, and it's not terribly far. Both these actually are not terribly far from Fremont Street. So people that have been to Vegas, it's near Fremont Street, which isn't the greatest little neighborhood ever. I will say that Melanie's, so Lucky Little Chapel, was at least from, I didn't get to go inside Alex's, but hers was, it was a cute little place. The people that worked there, they wanted to remain anonymous, but they were very kind. It was a clean place, and just the where it is, and like when you look at it from the front, it doesn't look like someone could get married there. It looks like a little, what would you say, like a little office or a little store?
Yeah, kind of.
And it's next to a bail bonds place, so. And then across the street from it is like a corrections facility. So
that seems very apropos.
Right, right. I know. I laughed when I was like, I walked down the street a little bit and I was like, oh, of course. That's funny. Yeah. Oh, it's a detention center. My bad. So yeah, across the street's a detention center. But yeah, the people there were super kind and we talked for a few minutes. Again, they didn't want to be, you know, pictures of them. They didn't want me to say their names, nothing like that. But they were very, very nice there. So you walk in, it looks like a little, almost like you'd get fitted for your wedding dress there. So the front little area you walk in, and then when you're actually going to go to the ceremony, they let me actually walk in back. And I took a couple of pictures. It's just like these two double doors that you walk through, and this room has a chandelier, some chairs, and you get married right there. They didn't have much to say on the wedding. And again, I think it's just because they wanted to remain anonymous. But they did say on average, weddings take about 10 minutes at their chapel. And typically weddings are pre-booked. So, I mean, I know that they got married pretty close together, but I guess at least for Lucky, they must have pre-booked it beforehand. It wasn't like a spur of the moment thing.
That's interesting. I mean,
who knows? Maybe they had just an open day and it happened that way. But at least for Melanie's, I think that one was decent. Yeah. And that one again happened on November 30th, 2019. Lucky little chapel. Mm-hmm. Now for Alex's, that was November 29th. And that was at Chapel of Love. Now this one, they were not there when I got there. I talked to the security guard for a little bit and he was super nice. But they have a sign outside. I'm just going to read it real quick. It says walk-in specials today, weddings, vow renewals, Elvis ceremonies, just for fun ceremonies, say I do drive-through, costumes and tux and gowns. So there's, I mean, if it says walk-ins today, I'm going to guess that they could have done that spur of the moment. So I'm wondering if like Melanie had theirs planned out and then they went and they're like, oh yeah, we want to do it too. And then found this little place that does it same day. Mm-hmm. Speculation, I know. But just going off of like what types of places it was. Now his doesn't even have a name on the outside of the building. It was just like this little, there's some brick and then like you walk up to this red door and then they have that walk-in specials today sign. I couldn't even find it at first because, you know, there's no name. So I'm like, I don't know if this is the right chapel, but you can walk in the building on the other side. And it looked like people were like rehearsing for a play in one little area. There was like a hair studio and a couple other little things. And then the security guard saw me and talked to me for a few minutes and kind of showed me around and showed me how like when you're going to get married there, the door that you walk in, which is on the inside of the bigger building. Mm-hmm. And I actually asked him, I was like, hey, so on this marriage certificate, it shows the name Keisha. Do you know her? And he's like, yeah, she actually works later today. He took my information for her to see if she'd call me and give me some more input. She did not call me yet, but I'm still hoping she might.
Hopefully so.
I left her our information and like our podcast name. So if you're listening, please call me.
You'll be waiting by the phone.
I will be waiting by the phone. Yeah. But yeah, that was my experience there. I didn't get to go on Alex's and I was so much, you know, more interested in to hear theirs because that chapel has spoken out about it. But unfortunately they weren't there and I wasn't going to call and make an appointment. Oh, off topic though. There is this giant weird cat statue nearby down the block from it.
That sounds wonderful.
And, I will send you it. It is a little too big to bring home, but it was pretty freaking fantastic. So the trip was not wasted.
No, you got a lot of information. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was. And now we get to explore Rexburg. So we'll try to get as much inside information as, you know, people will give us. I mean, I think that's it. But like we mentioned at the beginning, if you have any comments or any cool information that you've seen, feel free to email us. Give us, you know, links if you have it. We do read them all and we discuss it. So immediately when we get something, we're normally calling or messaging each other, trying to find more.
Yeah. And we really appreciate you, the people who have reached out, please continue. We want to learn as much about this as possible, right? So that is why we are traveling to Rexburg. And that's why we research as much as we do and meticulously as we can. We are trying to understand the full scope. So if you can give additional insight, like some of you have done, we would really, really appreciate it because it just allows us to flesh this out even more. So I guess that's probably it for this week. Amanda, Jackie, did either of you have anything else?
I'm just really excited for our trip. That's pretty much it. And I hope that everybody enjoys the information that we do gather.
Mm-hmm. And if you do live in like the Rexburg area and have any input or anything that you want to add or somewhere that you think we should check out or whatever, just email us, please.
Preferably over the next couple days.
Mm-hmm. We won't say more than that.
Other than yes, we will not say more than that. But if you have questions, please email us in the next, you know, few days. Other than that, again, let us plead for money. If you love the show and support us and like the direction that we are taking this in, please become a Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/wesawthedevil. And we have multiple tiers, everything from stickers, t-shirts, shout out, private episodes, the ability to help us choose the case, you know, talk about the case privately, ask us questions, and so on and so forth. So there are a lot of benefits, and we want to turn this into the best sounding show humanly possible.
Right. And so, do you want to shout out our Patreons or patrons that we have currently?
Yeah. So thank you, Gwendolyn. Thank you, Derek, the newest Patreon this week. We sincerely appreciate your support. Iris, again, thank you so much. We really appreciate that. And then also Ian. Both Ian and Iris will be receiving t-shirts and stickers and a bunch of other good stuff. Derek's getting some stickers. Again, thank you so much, guys, for you know, being here for us. We sincerely appreciate it.
Thank you.
And until our next episode, then, who knows what'll change this week?
Until next crime, wash your damn hands.